passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Back, Cole Kubik here. We just heard Jim talk about this sack number where Nick Saban was reacting to their woeful numbers, and not that you thought this team was going to be the best line team in the country, but it is worth discussing, though. Because you understand that stuff a lot better than we do. So what's going on there?
There are some technical issues, specifically at offensive tackle, Paul, where the feet, the hands are not necessarily married together. And I think they've gotten into some bad habits. I think they've been put into some poor situations. Some of the play calling doesn't have a lot of rhyme and reason for me. I feel like it's becoming a shot play offense. And not a lot of us going into this year thought that they would be a deep ball offense, and that's kind of where they would generate the majority of their yards. I think there are some things that can be done to assist with it from a formation standpoint, play calling standpoint. You've got a dynamic quarterback. Move the pocket a little bit more. Help those guys out some. Put a tight end next to them a little bit more, specifically on the left side where they're struggling. I don't understand that part of it. And you do have receivers that are now making plays and a quarterback that can deliver the football down the field. That's great. It's just they have this potpourri of play calling. And the main odor seems to be coming from these shot plays, but we don't really, the other stuff's just kind of thrown in there. Like, I don't know what the rest of potpourri is, but whatever the aroma's coming from are the shot plays. And then they just go find the bark and the leaves and the flowers, whatever else they, I don't know what potpourri is. Just kind of like the plays just seem to be just plays they're throwing in there. And then, oh, we'll get a deep ball every now and then and it won't really matter.
In this particular matchup, we didn't expect Tennessee, maybe you did, but a lot of people didn't expect them to be this tough on the defensive line. What are the problems for what you just got through describing?
First, the edge defenders. James Pierce has been dynamic off the edge. Speed rush, speed to power. We saw that against Texas A&M a little bit. Tyler Barron can go out there. He can get you off the edge. Roman Harrison can go and give you speed off the edge. Paul, there are not a lot of great edge rushers in this league right now. We're used to having every team littered with one or two guys that you just know are going to be a problem night in, night out. It's not like that in the SEC currently. But Tennessee has multiple guys that can get you in multiple ways, and that also allows them in some jet packages to put more lighter defenders on the field for where now they even hurt you inside with a few of those defenders. And the defensive tackles, their bigger defensive linemen, are actually playing really good football this year as well. It's going to be a problem for Alabama. I would want to see quarterback draws. I want to see more screens. I think Alabama's thrown fewer screens than any team in the Southeastern Conference. Find ways to get your linemen on the move a little bit, get those guys upfield, those defenders upfield, take advantage of that speed rush. There are ways that Alabama can use some of that against Tennessee. It's just you have to show that you're going to do it first to slow them down and not allow them to rush you the way that they've had success all season.
Chatting with Cole. Cole, I want to go back a couple of days because a lot of people were bouncing around. They may have missed this one play because it looked like the game was over. But take us back to Lexington Saturday night. Everything seemed to be going Kentucky's way, and then one play may have changed the season for both schools.
Paul, that game was over in our minds. And Tom and Jordan and I, we talk during commercial breaks. We share what each other are seeing, maybe where we want to go, what we want to try to get into. All three of us collectively thought, this game's over. This is a wrap. The crowd was into it. They were hyped. There was energy. The Missouri sideline was dead. The Kentucky sideline was just jumping up and down, feeling excitement. Ray Davis was going. Devin Leary completed a few passes. It didn't feel like the Missouri offense was going to get going. Here comes a fake punt, touchdown pass. And then all of a sudden, the wind started blowing. A little mist started coming down. People started leaving. And Kentucky couldn't get anything going on offense. I'm not sure I have seen one play shift momentum as largely as that one play did in quite some time, maybe ever. Because we all agreed with you, Paul, that game was finished. And Kentucky was about to hammer down Missouri, and they couldn't get it done. Now, give Missouri a lot of credit. They went out, and you didn't have Luther Burden have a big game. You didn't have Cody Schrader have a big game. Brady Cook didn't even have a big game, but you found a way to win on the road. And I think that's a sign of a great football team, finding different ways to win in Missouri, weathered the storm. Coach Drinkwitz even told me before the game on the field, he said, I'm worried about us not starting well. How will we react to that? I want to see, well, he didn't want to see him start poorly, but he said, I don't know what I'll get exactly if we don't start well and we need that momentum. They didn't get it, but they still battled back, found a way to win. It was an impressive win for Coach Drinkwitz and his group.
So, Cole, as you look at Missouri the rest of the way, they have some really big games. I mean, huge games.
Massive.
I could Give us your view of this football team and what it looks like the rest of the way.
Well, I think a couple of things that stick out to me. Number one, you have to give a lot of credit to that offensive staff and what they're doing. Kirby Moore is doing an excellent job calling plays. He is marrying everything up. His is not a potpourri. His is a very organized bookshelf of how he seems to be calling plays. Everything works together. You can see where one thing builds to the next thing. And Brady Cook, last year, I thought the majority of his runs, Paul, were via panic. It was one read, two reads, and then I got to get the hell out of here. I don't know what, it was panic mode. He's much more calm this year. They are utilizing his legs as a strength and not necessarily a get-out-of-jail-free card. And they know how to use it. You go to the couple plays against Kentucky where he decided to keep off of a fake, and he had plenty of room to run. They have the stretch play that can go with Cody Schrader. Their defensive line can attack, and they can be problematic that way. Paul, you get good quarterback play in this league, a defensive line that's problematic, and a takeover receiver, of which they have all, and you can run the ball fairly well, you're going to be in almost every game you play in. So Missouri has problems that they can pose to everyone that they're going to play, which are going to be problematic, specifically up front. A good offensive line, a defensive line that's disruptive, and a quarterback that has not turned the ball over that much. I know the last two games, not necessarily what the first four or five were, but Brady Cook's protected the ball fairly well, and if he gets going, it's going to be tough to slow that offense down.
Cole, it's been the story of the day, and that's how Georgia deals with Brock Bowers. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the main area to me that it becomes problematic is if you are in a game like you were at Auburn. When it all comes down to it and somebody has to go make a play, now you may not have 19 to just say, you know what, throw him the ball and everything's going to be okay. Hand him the ball, pitch him the ball, push pass him the ball, line him up in the backfield, give him a direct snap. It all used to just be okay when that happened. But, Paul, I am not worried about the amount of weapons that Georgia has offensively. I think Carson Beck has played really good football this year. You still have Dominic Lovett. You still have Ra-Ra Thomas. Ladd McConkey's now coming back into the mix. And I think Daywon Edwards is getting a real good feel for this Georgia rushing attack. Are they as dynamic without him? No. Do they have other guys who can offset it for a couple of weeks? Yes, and you include a week off there before the Florida game, which I think is big. And we've seen guys come back from this in a matter of 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks. So I know Brock Bowers works harder than anybody. Kirby's told me that before. It won't be the same, but I don't look at this and just say, oh, no, they're not a national championship contender anymore or they can't win the SEC without him. They absolutely can. It just won't be as easy.
We talked about the game in Tuscaloosa, but to me, and I want to hear how you break this down, there is a sneaky game Saturday night in Auburn, and there's no reason to think that after what we saw from Auburn, but Ole Miss goes in there 2 years ago. I think Auburn won that game. A lot has changed since then, though. But what are your thoughts on the Tigers Saturday night?
Well, I still like the design of the offense. There are plays to be had. You just haven't had a quarterback that can consistently make those plays. And, Paul, I do think that there will be maybe not necessarily a wholesale change, but a shift at quarterback that comes sometime soon. And whether that's Robbie Ashford is the guy or Robbie Ashford begins to get 40-50% of the snaps, and that will make Auburn more dynamic offensively, and that'll force you to defend them in a different way. When that happens, is that team going to be prepared for that? We don't know. Auburn's pretty good at home. We've seen what they've done and how competitive games have been there, and Ole Miss traditionally has not played well there. My real concerns will be with the Auburn defense. This is a dynamic Ole Miss offense that has different weapons in different places. I think now you have two great running backs. The offensive line has gotten a little bit better throughout the course of the year. Caden Priestcorn is now healthy. He gives you a lot of different options on what you can do physically with him at tight end. And they have receivers that can hurt you down the field. Jackson Dart's playing great football. For me, the Auburn defense, Paul, you have 2-3 individuals that are playing really well at times. But collectively, I haven't seen them play great football as a unit. Now, Ron Roberts has had a good plan in place. I mean, Roman and I were just talking earlier about some of the things he designed to potentially slow that LSU offense down. Guys didn't necessarily follow up on those plays, but the plan was intact to potentially do that. They can't garner a consistent pass rush, and I don't think they're stout enough against the run up front. Secondary and Eugene Asante have played great football, but they need more at the point of attack from that group.
We'll see more, Cole, at 7 p.m. Eastern with Roman. Thanks, Cole. It's good to see you on Monday.
Thank you, Paul.
We'll take a short break. We'll go down to Gainesville a little bit later and find out about that big win against South Carolina. Your phone call's around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, and we'll talk to Ricky Pearsall in a couple of minutes, the big star Saturday afternoon for the Gators. Let's get back to the phone calls here, and Darren is up next in Alabama. Hello, Darren.
Hey, Mr. Paul.
Hey.
First, I want to start with Deion Sanders and the Colorado Road, the Blunt Road. See, I see what happened in that game. You're up 29-0 at halftime. Deion's all teeth. He's all smile. They went in that damn locker room and they smoked the victory blunt. That's what they did. They went and smoked the victory blunt.
But, you know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but Deion was already making plans to do a commercial after the game.
Yeah, but they went there and smoked the blunt, and then they got hazy that second half. So that's what happened. It's legal out there. So they smoked them a victory blunt at halftime, and they got their asses whacked the second half.
Hmm.
So I don't call it Coach Prime, because did you see the picture? It was all teeth at halftime. Did you see his reaction? He took zero accountability for the loss. He said, these boys got to figure out if they're in love with football or they're in life with football. He took zero account. It's all about
Darren, he was not the only coach Saturday that did or over the weekend that took zero accountability.
I get that. But we're talking about Deion right now, Mr. Paul. Now,
here's the problem for Deion. It's been a great story, but you know what? It's over.
Okay, he's done. All right, but I call him Coach Lime. Because Coach Lime, did you see the look on his face?
If you're trying to win in college football, you know, owning the month of September does not help you in the offseason.
And you beat three who?
Yeah,
what?
Exactly.
Okay, three what? Okay, now let's go here. Now, the Sick Naban and the Tuscaloosa Red Wave, and that's what they are, because they're not the powerhouse anymore. They're not the Alabama Crimson Tide anymore. They're the Tuscaloosa Red Wave. Okay, Sick Naban escaped Arkansas. Tennessee or LSU will get them. So, Alabama fans, go ahead and get ready for it. You're not going to the playoffs. You're not going to do it.
Even with two losses, I fully expect Alabama to make a claim for it. Hey, thanks for the call. Great stuff. Cooper is in Knoxville, Tennessee.
What's up, Paul?
Hey there.
Hi, how are you doing, bro?
We are doing great.
Yes, sir. So, just a question for you and what you think. If Tennessee, and I'm from Knoxville, I'm a Tennessee fan, I just went to the game. It's just a quick note, I think it's like smash mouth football. Again, in the SEC, like it hasn't been in a long time, the last like 5 years. But with that said, if Tennessee were to go, let's say, to Tuscaloosa and win, which is in the West, as you know, obviously, and then lose to Georgia on the East, and then Florida lose to Missouri, is there any chance Tennessee would get in? And I appreciate your show.
Thanks for the call. I think it's a dangerous path. It wouldn't be impossible. These things all factor into what else happens. But you know, Tennessee sitting there with only one loss and a win over Georgia, that would matter a great deal. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Curtis is also in Tennessee, a little deep, farther south of Knoxville, in Chattanooga.
Hey,
Curtis.
Paul.
Hey, good afternoon.
How you been doing?
I am doing great.
A third Saturday in October.
That's
what the rivalry is all about. I like our chances. Well, this one that I called earlier in the year said that we were going to win the game, and I still feel the other way. Paul, are y'all going to be in Tuscaloosa the weekend?
We will be in Tuscaloosa Friday and Saturday, so I hope.
Okay, well, I've been looking forward, because I'm going to be at the game, man. I'm looking forward to meeting you, Paul.
I look forward to that, Curtis. Well, you we'll be there. I don't know when you're getting in, but we'll be at, where? We'll be at Wade Hall, is that right? No. We'll be easy to find.
I know it, Paul. Yeah, and you was right what you was telling that caller earlier about who wants to go to an 11 o'clock game, man.
Somebody that buys tickets to a game, that's their prerogative to do whatever they want. They don't have any. You don't sign away your freedom when you buy a ticket to a game. You go or you don't go. It's helpful if you go, but that's your decision to make. JK is up next.
What's going on, Paul Feinbaum?
JK, all good here.
Man, hey, I was dehydrated at work yesterday, and I'm overheated because of Saturday. Now you put those two together. Okay. Hey, Paul, I just heard you say Tennessee would be get consideration with one loss, but Bama would still have a claim with two losses. Now, can you explain that to me, sir?
Of course.
Is it that time to rile up the fan base again? Give them some hope. You know them folks ain't going to the playoff, Paul. They can barely score 24 points.
But they're still alive, JK.
Hey, Paul, let me ask you something, man. Just be for real. We just talking football. Who in the top team, in the top 10, can Alabama beat barely scoring 24 points? Can they beat Ohio State, Penn State, Oklahoma, Georgia? You know they can't beat Washington or Oregon because they can't score with them. Who can they beat in the top 10, Paul? The silence is magnifying. Nobody.
I was contemplating.
So hey, Paul, I don't see them making the playoffs, and that's my hope for the season because my team is finished with two losses. So, hey, that's my goal for the rest of the year, get Alabama out the playoffs.
JK, what a thoughtful call. Thank you very, very much. Warren is up next in Palm Beach. Hello, Warren.
Hey, Paul. Long-time listener. Second time caller. First of all, you know what? I watched you on Friday in Knoxville, and I saw you talking to Eve Reckon-Watt, the UT volleyball coach.
Oh, yes.
And I love to see that, you know, I know your show is not all about football. It's about SEC sports. But a ton of your callers, it's all football. I wonder, like, what did they talk about the rest of the year if not football? I mean, before I ask my question, I'm going to give a shout out to UF. Cause, yeah, I mean, look, we got at UF, we got track and field, swimming and diving, golf, baseball, tennis, Bible championships. You know, come on. And, yeah, we got our lacrosse team. And I'm sure, Paul, you heard FSC was not in Title IX compliance a couple of weeks ago. They had to add a lacrosse team. I'm like, what are they doing over there at FSC? But anyway, back to football. So I got to talk about that South Carolina game in Columbia. You know, Gators and Napier needed a much needed win on the road, right? In a road win. And after Spurrier's comment about, you know, longer, bigger passes, we saw a few. We had some lucky ones, but we had some great fourth down conversions and some touchdowns of Ricky Kirkthall. Love it, love it. So I'm going to ask you, Paul, what Florida need to do to finish the season off? Should we open up this offense? Should we bring back the fun and gun?
Yeah, you know what? I think so. I mean, I think Florida, you know, escaped and really, I think that win did save the season because a loss Saturday was going to be devastating. There's a lot of positivity now, and there are a couple, but the schedule still has to be negotiated. We'll take a short break. We'll talk to one of the stars of Saturday coming up here in just a few minutes. Right now, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And now it's time for Fansville, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. So what about it, Fansville? How about Georgia? Not a bad record. 18 straight. As the number one team in the country. Third longest of all time. Rick is up next in Charleston.
Hey, Paul. Rick in Charleston. How you doing?
Very well, Rick. Thank you.
What is it going to take to make you a Gamecock fan? I think we need to put your name up in Williams-Brice Stadium, I think, Paul.
I might do it.
But would you take it?
Yeah, you put my name up in lights. I'll only say good things about the Gamecocks.
Fantastic. We'll have to be, I hope Shane Beamer's listening. But let me tell you something.
I hope he's not. I hope he's getting ready for Saturday.
Well, it's been a rough year, but we got a rough schedule. You know, we've kind of been in every game. But I personally thought that game Saturday was unbelievable. I mean, the catches that Florida made, this fella coming up over their heads, I mean, it was – and on the ground like a baseball player. I mean, it was phenomenal, the offenses. But I was just going to say, and I'm not – you know, I'm not attacking you because I love your show. I think it's been 10 years. I don't know. But you know,
Rick,
Nick Saban.
Interestingly, I have a couple of really close friends who are Gamecock fans, so I am. I'll lay off the snarkiness.
You know, like I'm saying, Nick Saban attacks his players coming off the field.
He does.
Now, Beamer was revving the crowd up, you know, and he was disappointed because that was a big.
The only
game.
Thing I said, I thought he went a little too far after the game, and that's the second time he's done that this year. But he is an emotional guy. That's what makes him so unique. So I'll take a vow to get off Beamer ball. Hey, thanks for the call. Dwayne in Louisiana.
Hey, this is a first-time caller. I'm a first-time caller. Hey, Paul Feinbaum, you want to be a Cock fan? Like you want to be a Cock fan?
I don't think I don't know. How do you be a
what?
Yeah, I'm working on that.
Hey, Paul Feinbaum, I'm gonna tell you something, man. Which one of quarterbacks from Tennessee and Alabama gonna throw more interception this week? All that Melrose, all he could do, throw the bomb. That's all he know. Hey. If Tennessee load up the box and stop the run, just wait for the bomb. That's all he could do. And the other quarterback for Tennessee, he can't do nothing. He's garbage.
Hey, Dwayne, you guys will have your chance in 2 weeks, so you better.
Hey, man, we're going to put up 50 on y'all. You think y'all score 50? Y'all think y'all can score 50? Huh? We're going to put up 50 on y'all. Huh? Huh? You know we're coming off a bye.
I don't think you've seen that Alabama defense yet.
Man, that defense ain't hitting on nothing. Y'all still young. Y'all still young back there, man.
I have seen your defense.
All that thing that Melrose dude could do is throw the bomb downfield. That's all he could do. You stop the run.
Well, I tell you what, I would have Melrose throwing the bomb every play against your defense.
Tennessee. You came from Tennessee. You let Tennessee know. Stop Melrose. The way for all he's going to do is throw the bomb. That's all you're good for, throwing the big, deep passes. All you got to do, wait on that. Hey, and that other quarterback you got from Tennessee, he garbage. I watched that clown there. That clown garbage. He might throw about 3 picks. I give him 3 picks, and I give Melrose about 4 picks. Now, pick which one you want. Hey, and another thing, Auburn's going to beat Ole Miss. That's my upset of the week, Auburn against Ole Miss.
Dwayne, great to hear from you. Always meaningful. Mike is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Mike.
How are you, Paul?
Hey there.
I'm surprised you're not hooked on Valium.
How do you know I'm not?
I don't know. I'm just guessing because the calls you get is pretty amazing.
I think you've just given me a really, really good suggestion.
Just trying to be helpful. I want to be a blessing, Paul. Now, a couple of things I want to talk about. One of them is the use of Thornton in Tennessee's offense. He's missing. I don't know why. I mean, the kid... He's got the size and the speed to be a great receiver. I don't understand why they're not using him some.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one I don't have a good answer for. But, hey, thank you very much for this suggestion, though. D in Georgia is up next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. How are you, sir?
D, we're doing well. Thank you.
Good, good, good. First, I want to say, oh, ye of little faith, and Rick that just called a couple of calls ago, pause. Paul will be a dog fan before he ever says that other word on national television. With that being said, we won't have any excuse as dog fans like other teams did when their best player went down over the past 2 years, one being up in Ohio in the playoffs and another one being in Tuscaloosa 2 years ago. What I will say is give you this name, Paul, Pierce Ferland. He will be the next great tight end coming up behind our current guy, Mr. Oscar Delp. And it's best that these kids go ahead and, you know, get their feet thrown in the fire unexpectedly now, because everybody counted us out last year when Nolan Smith went down, when Jalen Carter was hurt during that Missouri game. They're like, oh, Georgia's not going to be able to do it with their two best defensive players. We got a great coaching staff. We got a great head coach. They will adjust according to our player strength. And last time I checked, we got 4 and 5 stars, 2-3 deep. So everybody, like the little wannabe Buddha used to say, Mr. Aaron Rodgers, R-E-L-A-X, and go Dawgs.
Thank you, D. Thank you very, very much. Brad is in Macon, Georgia. You're on the air. Hello, Brad.
How you doing, Mr. Paul? What's going on, brother?
Thank you so much.
Hey, man, I just want to be the first to congratulate you putting Lee Corso in his place. Man, how bad is that guy sometimes?
Well, I think we all are appreciative of what Corso has done, but I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. Well, all those guys from up north, they never liked the fact that the best football is played down south.
No.
And, well, I mean, we pretty much own national titles down here, at least in the recent past, and we start the NFL with the best players. But did you see it's been a few years back, he said something stupid at game day at the Georgia-Florida game. Did you see that, where he made a video and apologized and like he was in a backyard with a it wasn't Ugga, but it was another bulldog right in front of him. Did you see that?
I did not see that, no.
Well, he goes, all right, I know I made a lot of people mad, so I just want to apologize to all the Georgia people, the fans and players. And the whole time he was saying that, that bulldog took a dump right on his shoe on cue.
That's funny.
And he even looked down and saw, and he says, this dog just on my shoe.
Oh, okay. On that rather messy note, we'll take a short break and we'll head down to Gainesville. Ricky Pearsall, you may have heard of him. You may have seen him help the Gators to one of the most impressive wins of the season Saturday night. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And always a pleasant day until Elliot calls from Ohio. Hello, Elliot.
Hey, Paul. Week 7, epic week. USC, Notre Dame, Oregon, Washington, North Carolina, Miami. The trend, nothing about the SEC there. So Daryl and I-Man and Jim and Legend and Larry, they can all go cry in their beer because it's not about the SEC anymore. That's why dividends are paying off at the SECisOverrated.com, Paul. That's all I got to say, brother.
Keith is up next. Hello, Keith.
Hello, Paul. How's it going?
Very well. Thank you for calling.
It's an honor to speak to you. This is the first time I've ever called into a sports program. I've got a couple of comments to make and a couple of questions. I lived in Texas for 40 years and never could get adapted to Texas and Oklahoma. I was a TCU fan, but I'm basically an Alabama fan from birth. What's going to happen when they come in to the SEC next year? What's the rotation going to be like? You may have spoken about this before, and if you have, I apologize. I don't get to watch your show every day.
Keith, here's the deal. We don't know what it's going to look like. The SEC has only released a 1-year schedule for next year. They haven't released the whole thing, but they have told us who Texas will play, who Oklahoma will play. there is still uncertainty about what happens after that. Number one, there will be no more divisions, and they are still debating whether to play 8 games, 9 games, how many permanents. But what we have now will be gone. Everything that you're seeing this year will be out the window beginning next year.
Absolutely. My last question to you is, do you think there's too many teams in the SEC, and can they get rid of some teams?
Well, Keith, I've got my doubts first of all, about the SEC, as we move forward, will have fewer schools than the ACC and the Big 12, and the Big 12, and I think even the Big 10. But to your question, can you just kick a school out? No, that is not the way the SEC plays. Thank you for the call. Really do appreciate it. Let's check in with G up next. Hey, G. Jaden, I'm sorry. Jaden, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to ask you how you thought about, or what you thought about Tennessee-Alabama this coming week, and Alabama getting some revenge. Because I just personally, I feel like Joe Milton's decisiveness has been really poor. And I feel like he definitely, against this Alabama defense, will make some poor decisions.
Yeah, Jaden, I tend to agree with you, and it's hard to go into a game like this with a lot of confidence with Joe Milton, and I think that's one reason, you know, why Tennessee has to establish a running game like it did a little bit against A&M, and the defense has to be large. I think the best chance for Tennessee to win this game is wreaking havoc with Jalen Milroe and maybe turning some turnovers into points.
Yeah, I really have been critical of Alabama's run game this year. I feel like it really hasn't been very good. And Tommy Reese has just called some bad run plays, personally. He tries to use Jace McClellan in a way that he's not meant for.
I'm glad you brought that up, because Cole Kubrick was here a few minutes ago, and he raised some issues about Tommy Reese. I was still kind of baffled by Tommy Reese's quarterback choices, and it's just an opinion, but I've always felt Tommy Reese wanted nothing to do with Jalen Milroe, and now he is stuck with him, so to speak. Tommy Reese could prove us all wrong to the national championship, but it's been a rather awkward 7 weeks.
Yeah, it was just kind of an awkward hire in the first place. My uncle is a booster for Notre Dame. I grew up watching him even play quarterback at Notre Dame. And I thought he should have just stayed at Notre Dame personally. But anyways, yeah, I just can't see Tennessee really getting it done, because I will say I was very impressed with the run game last week against A&M, but Joe Milton is just
that was a really great win for a challenge program right now. And I say challenge because going into the game in Knoxville Saturday morning, there was tremendous uncertainty. We had Heupel on our Saturday morning show, and he tipped it off. He talks about the defense, and that was unusual because that is not often what you hear from Josh Heupel. How about John in St. Louis?
Paul, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey there, John.
Hey, Paul, I was going to call in and just, I guess it's more of an opinion than anything, but NCAA Infractions Committee came down last week with their decision after wasting 3.5 or 4 years on this investigation with the University of Kansas under the tutelage of whoever the AD is out there and Mr. Bill Self. And what it came down to is basically they just a slap on the wrist, okay? And I guess from the big picture of college basketball, I'm of the opinion that programs like LSU, what they were into, and Arizona, and obviously Kansas for decades now, they're letting these programs continue to get away with this stuff, and they beat up on lesser programs. And I think the NCAA really just ought to throw away the book, and let's just open it up. Okay, let's make this a like the old AB. Remember the ABA, Paul, with those ABA contracts they'd sign these guys to that weren't didn't mean anything. Let's just open it up and, you know, let these programs do whatever they want to. I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, what do you think? I mean, you saw the details.
John, nothing surprises me anymore. And the Kansas case was really one of the most egregious in history. And yeah. I think it just shows you that the NCAA is a broken organization, and they have no ability to enforce their own rules. So therefore, schools like Kansas and others run roughshod, and that's what we got. And I don't think the public has any real concern anymore because
you're exactly right. Yeah.
The NIL, which has nothing to do with what Kansas is accused of.
I agree. Issue. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Paul. Thank you, sir.
John, thank you. Appreciate that very much. Robert in Mississippi. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Want to address a couple of your previous callers. Like to start with Elliot, the big team guy. Obviously, they don't have their own talk show up there, but he was talking about how the SEC is down and blah, 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 and telling Daryl and Mary and the bunch to shut up. Well, this is the SEC show, and until somebody knocks us off the throne, we are the throne. And my second call was for the guy that called you from Louisiana earlier talking about Alabama's defense and Tennessee this. I can't remember his name now, but he was talking about how Alabama's defense is no good and how Auburn is going to beat Ole Miss this weekend. And, well, that may be, but if they do, that'll be something LSU didn't do this year. And talking about defenses, Alabama's held Ole Miss to 10, and I believe his school gave up 55.
Robert, thank you very, very much. We still have an hour to go. More of your phone calls. Been a busy one, starting off with Brian Kelly, and we have plenty of time for you to call in.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.